Buildup of U.S. forces in the Persian Gulf continues at a steady rate. The Pentagon has said that in addition to active duty soldiers, as many as 100,000 reserve and guard members can now expect to be called up for duty. With the downsizing of forces over the past 10 years, the military has relied more and more on guard members and reservists. Currently, about 47% of the military is made up of these citizen soldiers, with a lot of key functions shifting to the reserve and the guard. At the same time, the U.S. has activated troops for more missions. There's Haiti, Bosnia, Kosovo, Afghanistan, just to name a few. And with increased reliance on these part-time soldiers, there has also been increased concern about burnout and morale. It's a concern that's all too real for General James Helmley, the chief commander for the U.S. Army Reserve. But he stresses that there is a difference between overuse and abuse.
I can tell you that there's great concern. It is probably the number one concern of mine, and that is trying to define what is the breaking point. Intuitively, my judgment, I have no math numbers and analysis that tells me this, but we are seeking to restructure our force so that we do not have to mobilize a reserve member more than 6 months out of any five-year period. What that requires is an understanding that it is not the whole Army Reserve that is stressed to the breaking point, it's only these smaller communities, and that I'm trying to restructure our force to take some units which we don't have much demand for and retrain them, re-equip them, restructure them into military intelligence formations, into civil affairs, into biological detection and surveillance. So the aim is that we would not have to ever routinely ask a reservist to perform more than 6 months of active duty out of a five-year period.
Are you concerned that there might be an exodus from the reserves if you don't make those changes?
Oh, absolutely. I think in a volunteer force that is as demanding on people as the armed forces are, you can abuse that force if you aren't sensitive to that very quickly. And so in the case of the reserves, they live in a different environment, and the extra ingredient that we have to be sensitive to is their civilian employment. And we've not had a lot of horror stories of reservists returning to not have a job or to have their job lowered or they've lost pay. In fact, many of the employers have provided extra support for the reserve members. So I'm very sensitive. Where there is great concern, we would have an exodus.
Now, you say that there have not been very many complaints about reservists losing their jobs or being demoted when they return or running into problems when they return to their families. But, General, we've talked to those in the reserves, and there are some tales of woe, and they're pretty grim.
I believe that. I didn't say there haven't been any. I'm a realist. And as dynamic and large a population as we're dealing with, there are bound to be. And as we uncover those, then we attack them. There are some, obviously, that I can't do anything about. Example, if you are a high-paid civilian employee and you suffer and your job is in the Army Reserve is as a lower-ranking enlisted soldier, it's not going to pay you $100,000 a year or $75,000 a year. We have the instances of those who are self-employed in the professions, attorneys, lawyers, engineers, are those who are self-employed by virtue of owning their own businesses. Those are the ones, candidly, who are at the most risk. A couple of years ago, the Congress initiated called a mobilization insurance program. That was designed to provide a payout if you were mobilized to cover those who might lose money. Well, what occurred was it was not implemented in a business-like manner, and the Department of Defense wound up having to go to Congress and request something like $63 million, if I remember, to pay out the premiums. It and the Congress vetoed it and zeroed out the program after they paid the money out. So the political apparatus in Washington today, that's a bad taste, and nobody wants to talk about it. Personally, I still believe that has merit. That would be the only way that I'm aware of we could cover those who are self-employed. And I keep noting to the members of Congress that I think we're going to have to look at that at some time in the future.
You mentioned earlier the public's perception of the reserves, and part of that perception is created in large part by the ads that we've heard for years that you can still hear on the radio.
Right.
Give us a weekend and we'll help pay for college. And it's created the notion of the weekend warrior. I know that is somewhat of a pejorative term within the military, but I think it is still sort of in the kind of general population, the way that many view the reserves.
Mm-hmm.
Has the Pentagon done enough to inform reservists about the fine print, about their new role in this new military? Does the Pentagon fully explain the burden they must bear?
That's a tough question. I think there's you walk a fine line. I mean, ultimately, you run the risk of scaring people off if you tell them, do you understand right up front that you could be mobilized, not that you will be, and the odds are this, and then you could be sent to Afghanistan or wherever. We do, though, have an obligation to ensure. It is a moral obligation to ensure that everyone understands that the purpose of the United States Armed Forces, active or reserve, is to perform the nation's bidding, and in the case of the Army, we openly say the purpose of your Army is to fight and win our nation's wars.
General Helmley, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, and thank you for support of the U.S. Army.
General James Helmley speaking with us from Fort McPherson in Atlanta, Georgia.